Chapter 22. Farnus Peter. Cherubael and Profanity. Quixos. It was early in 343.M41 before we reached Farnus Peter. By then, war was bifurcating the Cadia subsector, and armies of sheer horror were spewing out of the Eye of Terror. Like a whirlpool of fire, the Eye dominated the skies of most gate worlds, distended and angry, flaring more savagely than at any time in living memory. Every flash and pulse of its maelstrom was another warp hole opening, another flotilla of death unleashed. That spring was known as the staunch holding of the Cadian Gate, and entered the history books, as every scholar knows. During the first months of 343, the Cadians saw off the greatest incursion of chaos suffered in 300 years. It was almost as if the arch-enemy knew something. The SN brought me to Farnus, champing and eager to get on. We were escorted through the Immaterium by two other ships, Ricci's stately steeple of a cruiser and Vogue's ancient porcupine of a warship. Endor and Grumman, along with their retinue bands, travelled aboard the SN with me. It had been a long time since the SN had carried so many people. The Imperial Navy Task Force, a 10-ship squadron seconded from Battlefleet Scarus for special operations under the remit of the Battlefleet Disciplinary Detachment, was waiting for us. The task force had already been on station for a fortnight, and its reconnaissance and intelligence operations had comprehensively prepared the ground for us.
"We have a confirmed location for Pariah,"
Lord Procurator Olm Madathine told me over a vox-picked link from his own ship. Pariah was the operational word we had set for Quixos.
"Or at least his seat of activity, anyway. I'm relaying the data to you now. Site A is what you're looking for."
I turned from my seat on the SN's elegant bridge, and Maxilla nodded to one of his beautiful servitors. The map display flashed up on the secondary screen of my console. "I have it," I said, turning back to look at Madathine's slightly fuzzy image on the main bridge display.
"It's a table mountain called Feral Sidor, literally the Altar of the Sun, up in one of the remote northern wards of Hengav province. Provincial government has declared the whole ward a sacred territory because the area is riddled with Second Dynasty Tholos tombs. Access is supposed to be restricted to the Ecclesiarchy, the Farnese royal families, and sanctioned archaeologists. We believe Pariah obtained licenses to excavate on Feral Sidor about 6 years ago, in the guise of an archaeological mission from the Universitariate of Avalon. The local authorities are supposed to monitor such missions, but frankly, they have no idea what he's up to there. If you look at the detail map..."
"Yes, got it."
"You can see the extent of the workings. Pariah's constructed a small town up there, alongside the pit."
"The excavation is considerable."
"We think that's where he's buried or sited this facsimile pylon. It's difficult to get a clear view. We didn't want to get too close and tip him off."
I rose from my bridge throne and stood facing the enormous image of the Lord Procurator's face. "You're set?"
"Absolutely. You have a copy of my assault strategy there. Make any amendments you like."
There was no need. Madathine's plan was economical and efficient. Officially, this was an operation by the Battlefleet Disciplinary Detachment, prosecuting leads gathered during the inquest into the Thracian atrocity. Lord Procurator Madathine had entered into a cooperative pact with Commodus Voke to execute the plan. In reality, his pact was secretly with me. Olm was the only non-inquisitor I had written to. We encrypted the call signs and command authorities for the operation, agreed the 0 hour, and wished each other luck.
"The Emperor protects, Gregor," he said.
"I hope so, Olm," I replied. 2 hours before sunrise the next day, 500 Imperial Guard from the 51st Thracian moved in towards Feral Sidor, Site A, from covert forward assembly points in the surrounding hills where they had been dropped by troopships the day before. They advanced, silently, in three prongs, the first securing the single trackway that gave land vehicle access to the Table Mountain. When all three were in position, we woke Feral Sidor up. The frigates Zykov and Fury of Spatian bombarded the mountain for 6 minutes, raising a ball of fire that lit the landscape as if the sun had come up early. In its afterglow, 30 Marauder bombers overflew Site A at low level and delivered 30,000 kilos of high explosives. Another false dawn. Despite this punishing overture, when the ground troops went in 8 minutes after the last bomb, resistance was furious. Madathine had feared that the best part of Quixos's strength lay underground, wormed inside the mountain, resistant to the worst aerial assaults. In the blazing ruins of the excavation township, the Thracian troops found themselves engaging fanatical and well-armed cultists. Most wore the insignia and colours of the Mystic Path. Many were mutants. Initial reports estimated over 800 enemy warriors. Madathine committed the Task Force Reserve, another 700 Thracian assault soldiers. By then, we were already deploying in the second wave. Medea landed Inchabel and myself on the edge of the strike zone, along with Endor and his two weapon servitors. Reachy's shielded pinnace settled in close by, kicking up dust and delivering him and Commodus Voke, along with a bodyguard of 20 inquisitorial troops. Grumman, using a navy dropship loaned by Madathine, was the last to make groundfall, but the first to engage. Grumman's 10-man squad were all ex-Kazrakin specialists. As we hurried forward through the backwashing smoke, our landing ships rising back into the pre-dawn sky behind us, there was a tremor and a palpable upwelling of psychic force. Frighteningly powerful waves of psychopower erupted from the epicenter of Site A, killing over 30 of the forward troops, and then suddenly cut off. We had all anticipated Quixos would have vast psychic defenses. He had, after all, been collecting psychers like a Saradon, and it seemed likely that active psychic assaults would be a key element of his resistance, perhaps even more significant than his demon hosts. I had taken no chances. In two groups, my entire distaff of untouchables, some 50 individuals all told, had moved in alongside the first ground troop advances. Bequin, guarded by Nail and 12 of my warrior staff, led one group, and Thula Serskova, protected by Fischig and a dozen more fighters, led the other. The distaff had never been used on such a scale before, but it proved to be the weapon I had always suspected. The blankness they generated contained and negated the engulfing psychic storm, effectively bottling it inside Site A and preventing it from threatening our closing forces. With Inchabel, I moved underground, down the rock-cut steps into the inner sectors of Site A. For almost an hour, we fought our way through the smoke-swathed surface structures, a meter at a time. Now, with the sun rising, we found our first access point to the lower levels, a stairwell exposed by a bomb crater. The place was strewn with smouldering debris and a few unidentifiable bodies. In places, power cables were hanging, sparking from the rockcrete roof. We both wore motion trackers and switched left and right, gunning down cultists as they appeared. My bolt gun was already running short of shells, and Inchabel was onto his second-to-last power cell. The level of resistance was unbelievable. At a junction in the seemingly random jumble of tunnels, we encountered Endor. He had a couple of Thracian troopers and an Inquisition guardsman with him, but he'd lost both of his slow-moving attack servitors. I knew what he was thinking just by the look in his eyes. We had come in strong and confident, but perhaps not strong enough. I thought I had anticipated the worst Quixos could throw against us. Maybe I had underestimated him after all. Ferocious bursts of shooting alerted us to a firefight in a larger chamber to the left. We arrived in time to meet four wounded, terrified Thracian troopers fleeing towards us.
"Back! Go back!" they were screaming.
I pushed past them. The chamber beyond was massive and half-filled with veiling smoke. Green, unnatural flames were licking up the walls. At the far end, the already huge chamber seemed to open out into something much, much vaster. But that was not what occupied my eyes. Surrounded by over 50 bodies, most of them Imperial Guard, Commodus Voke was standing his ground against profanity. The old Inquisitor was shuddering, his robe stiffening with psychic ice. Corpuscent fire glowed from his mouth and eyes. The demon host, its cruel features just recognizable as a distortion of poor, lost Hussman's face, hovered in front of Voke, struggling at an invisible barrier of telekinetic wrath. We ran forward, abruptly drawing fire from cultists spreading into the chamber from the right. The Thracian beside me bucked and twitched as he was hit twice, and Inchabel cursed as he was winged. Endor urged the remaining men to advance on his lead and took the fight to the cultists, his las pistol blazing and his chain blade swinging. Voke was close to breaking. I could see him wavering under the immense pressure. I holstered my bolt gun and stumbled across the bodies and debris to aid him, praying that my rune staff would do what it was supposed to do. And a dizzying blast of white light and scourging heat blew me back through the air. I tried to get up, half realizing that I had been blown clean out of the chamber, through a flakboard partition into some kind of dank chute. Invisible forces lifted me to my feet. Light bathed me. Cherubael hovered before me.
"Gregor," it said, "you've come so far. I knew you had it in you."
I held the rune staff in front of me. The green marble scroll of demonic protection that Ravana had sent had already been reduced to a shattered remnant by the force of Cherubael's opening attack.
"I've waited for this moment for such a long time," said the demon host. "Remember on Ichan, I said you'd have to make things up to me. Well, this is the time. Now, this is the moment that everything's been about. The one I have seen coming since our paths first crossed. Destinies. Our destinies. Intertwined. Remember that?"
"How could I forget?" I spat. "You claim to have been using me all along, guiding me, even protecting me. I watched you kill Lyko on Ichan, so that I would live. For this moment? Why?" Cherubael smiled.
"When the warp is in you, as it is in me, you see time from all angles. You see what will be and what will come. What someone here now will do in a century or two. What someone there has done 1,000 years in the past. You see the possibilities."
"Riddles, that's all you ever speak."
"No more riddles, Eisenhorn. From the moment I first met you, I saw you were the only one. The only one with the tenacity, the skill, and the opportunity to give me what I want. What I want most of all. I saw that if I kept you safe, you would come and give me that most precious thing here on this world at this hour."
"I would never help a demon like you." Cherubael grinned, blank-eyed and utterly serious.
"Then destroy me, if you can."
It lunged. I raised the rune staff and channeled my will down through the psi-conductive pole into the lodestone. The carved fragment of the lith blazed with blue light. Pontius Glaur knew a thing about demon hosts. Their greatest weakness was the strength of the will that had bound them as slaves. The rune staff, so carefully prepared and constructed, so painstakingly etched with the ancient symbols of control, was a lever to topple that binding will by amplifying my own to levels that would overwhelm it. For a brief moment, I felt how it must feel to be an Alpha plus Psyker. The scintillating spear of energy that shot from the lodestone struck Cherubael in the chest. The demon host smiled for a second, and then its flesh vessel ruptured open, billowing a storm of chaos fire in all directions. I had cast it out of its binding and banished it back into the warp. And in the moment as my amplified mind overmastered its, I saw the years of enslavement it had endured at Quixus's hands, the torments of its binding, the great forbidden text of the Malus Codicium, whose arcane knowledge Quixus has used to create his demon hosts. And I realized that I had given Cherubael exactly what it wanted after all. Freedom. I stumbled back into the main chamber. By then, Voke, whose resistance to profanity had been astonishing, was dead. I remembered Voke's words after the atrocity on Thracian.
"I will make amends. I will not rest until every one of these wretches is destroyed and order restored. And then I will not rest until I find who and what was behind it."
He could rest now. That work was done. The demon host was casting the valiant old man's empty husk of a body aside and gliding towards Endor and Inchabel, who were both already on their knees in agony. Cyan flames washed from profanity's fingertips and wrapped my two friends in tight, burning psychic shackles. They were trapped morsels for it to feed off at its leisure. Profanity froze when I appeared, instinctively knowing I posed a more serious threat. The lith stone was still smoking with blood-red light. The demon host surged through the air at me, teeth bared, arms spread, incandescent with light, baying my name. It was like facing the attack run of a supersonic warcraft firing all guns. I know so. It is my misfortune to have experienced that, too. Profanity whooped with glee. "At Khazad-geth, you told me to make my weapons sounder next time, monster!" I howled, and impaled its charging form on the steel pole of the rune staff. "Is this sound enough?" Profanity screamed and exploded, blowing me off my feet. I don't think I banished it. I think I obliterated its essence forever. The runestaff was, miraculously, unscathed, and lay amid the rubble. But profanity's dissipating being had made it white-hot from base to cap, and I could not pick it up again. I ran across to Titus Endor and Inchibel, both of whom lolled weakly on the floor. Inchibel was dazed but intact. Endor had demon gashes across his chest and neck. He looked up at me blearily.
"You got them both, Gregor."
"I pray there are no more," I replied, trying to staunch his bleeding. His rosette slid out of his coat pocket, and I leaned to pick it up. The inquisitorial symbol was decorated with the ornate crest of the Ordo Malleus.
"Malleus," I hissed.
"No."
"When did you transfer, Endor?"
"Damn you, when did you change Ordos?"
"They forced me," he wheezed. "Ozma forced me. When he had me on Messina. There were certain matters from a case a few years ago. He got his hands on them somehow. He promised I would burn if I didn't help him get to you."
"What matters?"
"Nothing. Nothing, Gregor, I swear. But he has Bezel's backing. He could have made anything look heretical. I transferred orders to stop him breaking me. He said I would be rewarded, advanced. He said Ordo Malleus was a better prospect for me."
"But you were to keep an eye on me."
"I told him nothing. I never sold you out. I did just enough to keep Ozma satisfied."
"Like coming here. No wonder you hid your rosette. He wanted you to take me down, didn't he?" Endor was silent. Inchibel looked on in stark disbelief.
I was going to go along with this operation in the hope that it might be successful. Orsini's under no illusions that Quixos is a menace. And this was an expedient way, perhaps, of eliminating him. If you were still alive at the end of it, I was told to arrest you on the Carter charges. Or if you resisted..."
"Get him up to ground level," I told Inchibel quietly. "Find him a medic. Don't let him out of your sight."
"Yes, sir."
"Gregor,"
Endor gasped, as Inchibel lifted him.
"By the God Emperor, I never meant—" "Get him out of here," I growled.
The assault on Feral Sidor was 3 hours old when Grumman, Ricci, and I entered the undervault of the excavation pit. Madathine's forces were still locked in a monumental struggle with the renegade's warriors throughout the warren of tunnels and chambers in the Table Mountain. Ricci was weak from a blade wound, and all of his bodyguards were dead. Grumman had just 2 Khazarakin left with him, both of them armed with las rifles. The vast undervault was an excavated pit almost a kilometre deep, open to the sky. The Cerebite copy of the Radiant Pylon rested in the base of it, surrounded by adamantite scaffolding. Gibbet cages, hundreds of them, hung from the scaffolding on chains. In each one, trapped and helpless, was a human body. They were Quixos's carefully collected arsenal of rogue psykers, secretly acquired from all over the Imperium. It must have taken him decades to accumulate so many. One of them, I had no doubt, was a Saradon.
"What is he doing?"
Ricci asked, a touch of awe in his voice.
"Something we have to stop,"
said Grumman, with a direct simplicity I appreciated. It was the only answer any of us needed. We had been living at our nerve ends since the assault began, and were wired with combat sharpness. Even so, despite our combined experience and skill, what happened next took us all totally by surprise. One moment there was nothing. The next, a robed, armored form was in amongst us, moving so fast it was simply a blur. So fast, so accursedly fast. Instantly, Ricci was split open down the length of his spine. As he was still in the process of falling on his face, choking on his own blood, one of the Khazarakin was severed at the waist and toppled in halves, his gun firing spasmodically. The other Khazarakin folded up around the impaling thrust of a long, dark blade, spontaneously combusting from the belly out. Grumman pushed me out of the way as the devastating blur turned again and fired his las pistol at it 3 times. Snapping round faster than my eyes could follow, the long, dark blade the blur was wielding deflected each crackling shot. Grumman's head left his shoulders. Quixos, the arch-heretic, the renegade, the unforgivable radical, whirled on me before Grumman's butchered body had even started to slump. I had one fleeting glimpse of the long demon sword, Carnager. It was gnarled and knotted and thick with abominable runes, and irregular claw-like serrations. That's all I saw as it came whistling towards my face.